What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Hey, Sal.
Hank, what's going on? We haven't worked a case in years.
I just bought my car at Carvana, and it was so easy. Too easy.
Think something's up?
You tell me. They got thousands of options.
Mm-hmm.
Found a great car at a great price.
Uh-huh.
And it got delivered the next day.
It sounds like Carvana just makes it easy to buy your car, Hank.
Yeah, you're right. Case closed.
Buy your car today on Carvana. Delivery fees may apply.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
ChumbaCasino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
5 a.m. I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops. One more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius. Live. Fit. Go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
From athletic stuff like a full court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff like a half mile stroll. Get those steps in. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at BestWestern.com.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
Hey guys, I'm Cameron Stover from huntinggeardeals.com, and today joining me on the podcast is Andre DeQuisto from Lone Wolf Custom Gear. If you don't recognize that name, you must be living under a rock, because Andre has revolutionized mobile hunting for longer than most of us have been hunting. He has a unique way that he approaches each and every detail of his hunting equipment, and it shines through their production and the product lineup that they've brought to us today. So, without further ado, we're going to hear from Andre, both for the newly released products and what's still to come for this year. This episode of the Hunting Gear Podcast is brought to you by the Moultrie Mobile Feed Hub. How many times have you gone to check your deer feeder only to realize that it wasn't working properly and your well-planned hunt would be a waste of time because there's no telling how long it had been empty or clogged? Well, the Feed Hub solves all of these problems by bringing the power and convenience of cellular technology directly to your deer feeder. With the Feed Hub, you have complete control over feed times, and you can rest easy knowing your feeder is working properly and you'll be ready for your next hunt. The Feed Hub's universal design means it'll work with most major brands of feeders, and you can learn more information at MoultrieMobile.com. Tacticam's Reveal cellular trail cameras offer exceptional power, longevity, and superior image quality, regardless of the time of day. These cameras boast the fastest shutter trigger, the longest detection range, and the sharpest image quality with minimal motion blur, even in nighttime conditions. With multi-carrier support, a weather-resistant design, instant photo delivery, and user-friendly operation, the Reveal cellular camera is an essential tool for any outdoors person. Today's episode of the Hunting Gear Podcast is brought to you by Code Blue Scents. Not only do they have an extensive lineup of deer scents and urines, but they also have some scent elimination products like laundry detergent, field spray, and everything else you need. So before you get started with your hunt this season, be sure to check out Code Blue Scents. Hey guys, today joining me on the Hunting Gear Podcast is Andre DeQuisto, the man that needs no introduction. So without further ado, welcome to the podcast.
How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. It's Friday morning. I'm getting ready to leave for vacation. A little bit of beach time before it's time to start hitting the woods and trail cameras really hard and get ready for the season.
You lucky dog. I'm going to be developing, manufacturing, and working on more shit right on through the weekend. So,
well, I'm kind of envious of you because that's a fun little process that I like doing. But, man, you have made a career and lifestyle out of it and honestly changed the way I hunt and the hunting industry as a whole. So thank you for your contribution to the hunting industry. You need no introduction. And if you don't know who Andre is, you must be living under a rock.
So we developed our stuff, obviously, for my passion for hunting back in the day. The equipment that was out there wasn't cutting it. So I had no other hobbies, you know, and I just would develop a stand, run the season with it. And then the off season is when I just played around improving. What I found was lacking, I, you know, made the changes, and it's been an evolution for 40 years now here. So this is our 40-year anniversary from first starting to build stands in 84. Actually, we were building a little bit earlier than that, but we incorporated in 84. And if you look at the stuff, we were probably ahead of the game back then. We had lighter stuff than anybody else had and more compact, and now it's just been totally refined. You see how refined the stuff is now with all the machine parts and the quality that level that we're at now. We've come a long way. So
yeah, I mean, just the changes in technology and then the materials being utilized today, it just continues to be a cutting edge, and you guys are at that leading changes in the industry for so many years and being able to stay on top of that and think far ahead. So I'm curious of what you've got in store for us this year.
Okay, so this year, being the 40th, and our tagline is 40 years of innovation. So we put out, we really put the metal to the pedal here with 7 new items we got coming. We've already released the hybrid stand. It's a new type of tree stand for the saddle hunters. You can actually hunt saddle hunt with it or normal hunt with it. The platform's a little smaller. But what's nice for the saddle guys, some of our crew that are saddle hunters, we made them some prototypes and started using this, and it seemed to be a really, really nice unit where you have a seat with a saddle platform now, so you're not, you have to get the pit hip pinch, or your feet are killing you from standing too long. This one, you'd be able to get in there and go all day with it. Simply to straddle the seat facing the tree, plop down, you got your entire weight off your system. Oh, okay. So
you don't have to turn around. You're actually just kind of hugging the tree and taking the weight off your feet.
Yep. They use the seat then for knees when you want to, lean into the tree. Yeah. And then if you want to just hunker down for a little bit, you flip the seat down. You have a normal little seat then, smaller platform. But it's the big thing about it is it's completely cableless. So there's nothing, no obstructions at all on the base there. And it's solid as a rock. We use that new upcam system that I developed for the fix. And you don't have to pump it. Any way you put it in a tree, she just locks in tight and, no pivoting in that. So, it also has now, normally your saddle platforms have that smaller I-beam on it. Yeah. Well, this has a longer I-beam, not as long as a regular stand, but it has enough now that we can take that seat and also turn to a shelf. That was a problem with saddle platforms for hauling gear out there. They were just flat, small. So now we have our shelf design, we just received a patent on that. So it took close to 5 years to get it. But we received that under now. So that stand will have that patented shelf design in there. And now you can carry your pack and your sticks alongside with this saddle type platform. So it's, it's been a big hit. We sold a ton of them already, and we're building more now. So that was the first bull round.
Okay. So you guys actually have the patent now for a tree stand or saddle platform such as this hybrid, where it turns into a packable platform on the back.
Yeah, the shelf container of the seat. So then we came up with that years ago, and you see just about every other manufacturer out there's followed suit, and they got similar designs on there now. So the other thing we did is instead of going the A to the A this year, we normally go there. We're hunters, so we're just taking our clothes off and basically getting back. We're never on time. We never have our new products in line. And we announce them, and then we go develop and build them by the end of the season. And we've been doing that for years, and everybody just sees what we do, takes the ideas, starts going. And they get to jump on our ideas before we even do. So now what we did is we're not releasing anymore at the ATA, and we're releasing them as we go. So now you have this hybrid stand that just came out. Nobody knew about it until it was released. This micro camera arm. We have compact doubles. We got a micro double. There's all kinds of new stuff we did this year, 7-8 items. So we can go in these in a row if you want. Or
I'm curious. So I know I do a lot of cell filming with my phone because, let's face it, mm-hmm. camera gear's not getting any cheaper, and we're all carrying a nice high quality camera.
Exactly.
So let's talk about that camera arm.
Okay, so we came out with the pocket arm a few years ago, but people probably don't realize that I came out with the first micro camera arm back in 2006. And how that was developed, I was never into filming, and a friend of mine, Adam Hayes, was on me, hounding me all the time to start a show and get a camera. So I finally let him come along and film me on a hunt. And he showed up with this big, huge, bulky, heavyweight arm, and I'm like, you know, the thing looked like you could put a TV on it, would support it. And I'm like, man, that's kind of overkill. And then it took a ratchet strap to tighten it in. And then so that's not going to work for me, I said. So as I whispered, I'm at sunup when he's trying to set all this up. Literally went back to the shop, took a climbing stick, cut up all the tubes to it, and I made the first, we called it the strong arm, the first micro, not a micro, but a small compact size camera arm. Then we sold those for a while. The company that I sold out to ran them for a while, and that just kind of went away. Now that we got back into it and we're all filming again, wait till addiction's back, we made the pocket arm, which is slightly over a pound and literally fits in a pocket. It's so streamlined. We came out with a micro arm now. So now we have one that's actually a three section arm is 12 ounces. And if you took, you know, some arms off it, you can get the thing as low as like 8 ounces. Extremely thin, folds. It's not a problem to get it out. And that's a big deal with self-filming. A lot of guys it was a pain in the ass for guys to do. Well, now it's so simple to carry it out. And what was still a burden to me is we're all trying to find the smallest head to put our, we started with the mini cameras. Then we went down and started, like you said, everybody's filming with cell phones now. So it's like you got this big head on there, this nice micro camera arm and a small cell phone, and it's still got a bulky head. So I just developed kind of a micro head for the for our camera arm now. So that fits in the profile of the arm itself. So you're familiar with the smallest ones that they use on like tripods and that. They got the handle sticking off. They're kind of big and bulky around. This is like 3/4 of an inch thin. The arm folds completely inside itself, and she lays flat, and it's just, you can put the whole thing right in your pocket. Nothing grabs on or bursts. So we took that a step further.
Okay.
Those are the micro camera arms are out already released. You see them on the website. This compact little head is coming within probably a few weeks.
Okay. So both the hybrid and the micro camera arm are available for purchase now, but the the cell phone camera head is not available just yet.
Yeah, it'll be here well before the season, so you'll be able to change up. The other things next that we could probably get into is we think we had some of the nicest climbing sticks out already, and we just made them better, lighter, more user friendly. So what we did is familiar with our compact stick. That's probably my favorite of all time. But we had a step that flipped right or left.
Yeah.
So people always struggling between, do I do the doubles or I do the compacts? So a year and a half ago, I started working on a double step on that compact. It took me a while to get it to work. It wasn't working right, so I moved some things around. And now we have a climbing stick that's probably the most technologically advanced one out. We have four patents pending on it. It's the most compact. It has a double step it turns into. Steps flip right or left. It's got aider systems on for three different types of aiders. A micro button now that we've turned into a cleat. So it handles Amsteel, rope, belts. It's just versatile as all hell, and it's our still compact, in the same profile as our original compact. So they stack and they go on your stand and get as close to your body as you can. So that's the advancements for the actual compact. Then we took our doubles. They're already the most compact by far of what's on the market. They were like a half inch thick. So, you know, four pack is like 2 inches. Now we have a quarter inch thick double. It weighs in at 15.5 ounces. It's a 14 inch and literally four climbing sticks stacked on top of each other is 1 inch high. So you can take a whole four pack, set it on a table next to someone else's single, and it's the same height. You know, most of the climbing sticks on the market are fixed. They're bulky. They're 9, 10, 12 inches to stack four of them. Super bulky. These will pack in a one-inch profile. You could literally throw them in your backpack. They got double steps on them. We've made changes to interlock them together better. There's tons of improvements on them. Guys are just that are seeing them are flipping on them. Those were just released a week ago. So they're taking orders on those now. The double step is in production right now. Actually, some are going to anodizer this week. And then the compacts will be another 2 to 3 weeks for delivery. So it's all trickling in. Again, two new huge improvements to our existing line, you know?
Yeah, the mobile hunting market, and if anybody in the world knows how it's changed through the years, it's you, but it just continues to advance in technology and materials to be more user-friendly.
Mm-hmm.
And it just blows my mind that a few years ago, I thought, wow, we're at the pinnacle of mobile hunting. And then you fast forward to today, and I'm like, wow, we're at the pinnacle of mobile hunting. What does tomorrow look like? And
well, that's what I was going to say. I don't know what tomorrow will look like. But so now we're gearing. We've gone as compact and probably as light as we can go on these. Nobody's going to get anything smaller than that. So you're aware I invented the first climbing stick years ago. And if you look at most designs out there, they're pretty much similar design. They got a V-bracket on there, tubular design, steps. Maybe now the difference is that they're doubles instead of a single, or they don't flip both ways. But they're all started with that same technology, and then guys have their little ideas on what they did with them, and they're basically that original stick I did years ago, kind of like a mimic of it. So we took it a step further and actually did a even more compact, even more streamlined, and even more advancements of patents on them. So literally it's just, you can't get any more compact than you can with these sticks now. So and one thing I've mentioned about, you know, there's a love hate between doubles and then there's and compacts. The guys don't know which way to go. So now you got literally the both the best worlds in that compact, but the doubles are quite a bit lighter. So it's still going to be a struggle which one you want to use. I use the compact doubles on my 0.5 early season when I'm going completely light and running and gunning, and my bigger setups of a 7.5 or 1.0. I'm always using four compacts on that.
That was kind of where I was going to go towards to the end of it is your setup and what you're running. So the man that's behind the innovation and changing all this and the continuously just tinkering.
Mm-hmm.
What are you using in the field each and every day? So let's outline that.
Okay. So
again,
I'll give you my setup, but it all comes back to, if you go back to when I started building hang-ons, we made them a little bigger. We cut off the nose of them, made it short. We constantly, me and my pro staff, we're just constantly kind of just struggling with it. And I came up, to me, the perfect hang-on is a 20-inch seat. It's a, if I had one to choose for all season, all around, it's going to be a 1.0. It's going to have a 19-inch wide platform, 27 inches out from the tree. We've gone further. We've gone shorter. We always found myself coming right back to that. Obviously, these are all lightweight stands, and they're going to be the compact doubles packed on that. That's going to be my all-around go-to setup, early season, late season, mid-season. But now we're all spoiled, and I got even backpacks. I have a different backpack for early and for late. You know, take those because they just, you know, you got less clothes on, less bulk, and it's, you can get by with a little less. You know, when you got to carry more in late season, and you got to have a little bit more stuff to pack. So I did come introduce, so I cut my teeth on designing climbers. I had the first climber years ago that was completely compact and some really innovative designs on that. So we brought a climber back now. Now we got the lightest, most compact climber. And man, I hunted it with that two and a half weeks last year. Do I miss it? That is a, you can't get lighter, quicker of a setup. You can dive in the dark anywhere you want, climb up, you see something different, you climb down. Two minutes, basically having it off your back on a tree and set up, you know, so.
I remember the year that I switched from a big bulky Summit mm-hmm. to a hand climber. Yep. And it just made life so much easier to the point to where I could pack in. And if I saw a deer that I needed to shoot from the ground, I didn't have to take the tree stand off. I could literally just draw my bow back with the stand on my back. And that was the first really move for me into that mobile hunting market was that hand climber and how that worked out. And it was great then. And that was, I don't know, 2008, 2010, it feels like.
That was my favorite go-to, the hand climber. We made a sit and climb for guys who wanted a little more comfort in that. But boy, I'll tell you, that hand climber, I was, you know, stealthy with that baby. I could tell you stories about literally climbing up trees with huge bucks within, you know, eyesight of me, and in the evening toward dark, I have a couple bucks sparring out in front of me, and literally I wanted to slip down out of the tree and get down there. I was actually going to bring my daughter back in to try and harvest one of her first Pope and Young when she was 14, and I was going to leave that stand on a tree there and just back out so I didn't spook them. They were, you know, they're busy sparring out there, and I said, you know what, screw it, I'm taking it with me, you know, because it was a lot of other guys that hunt in that area. I tore that thing down, packed it up, and got the hell out of there. Them deer never even knew I was there. Got in on her. I got my daughter back in there, and she ended up getting a crack at one of them. So just mobile as hell. See something going on 100 yards away, climb down, slide over, climb up a tree, and you're in the game, you know. So it's really a really hunting machine. And now it's so light and compact for these guys hunting the mountains and the hills. Literally 11 and a half pounds for the two pieces now.
11 and a half pounds. And it even has, is that like a sit and climb bar?
It has, micro sit and climb bar on there too, which it's so light. It's, you don't even need to leave it off. It just makes it an effortless climb. So you're not going to work up any sweat. You know, getting a little older too and a little more out of shape. It's a little more effort to, I couldn't climb like a squirrel like I used to in the days past, but with that bar on there, it's no effort at all. To get up there, and if you don't want it in your way, you just step over it and slide it back. Still got them stirrups on the side that lock it in. Really aggressive teeth. All the things I've learned in the past and little things that I wanted to change, and then I end up getting out of the industry for a little bit and selling out, all those came back, and I fixed them all on this this climber. So it's a well-oiled machine on that one.
So the time frame in which you stepped away from manufacturing and tinkering and all this stuff, like, did you go crazy or did you just sit back and like, I'm going to do this for myself and enjoy it for a first time for a while?
I actually consulted for a some companies during that time, and actually, so I still was developing some things, but not as, once the kids got involved back again, and we opened this custom gear company, then I started getting really involved in taking stuff to the next level and designing. I love to do that. I've always wanted to do that and just that, and then have somebody else handle the, you know, the marketing, the manufacturing. I could just feed them good products. So I had the opportunity to do that for a few companies, and then once I got back into it, now I'm trying to make a all of these things are just, you know, they're all cutting edge hunting equipment that makes it life easier for you. And I've always been one to, I know what I wanted and what I wanted to design, and it's weird that what I was doing years ago when I was fashionable, now there's a bunch of guys that are out there that do just what I was doing. They love tinkering with their equipment and their stuff, and they got a lot of good ideas, and I see what guys want. You know, we have a page now, Mobile Hunter United, and I could follow that, and I could just see where, I can see where the market is going or leaning to just by the conversations on there, and I can anticipate what guys would like and wouldn't. So we manufactured to suit everybody's wants and needs now, you know.
Yeah, the evolution in the mobile hunting side, it seems like it's driven by the community itself, just like you were talking about. And it's funny, like you mentioned the ATA show, and I remember a few years ago somebody released a mobile hunting setup, and you walked over and you're like, what are you doing? Like, this isn't what we want at all. Like, it doesn't, it's not what your mobile hunting is about. But the innovation and then the creativeness for a lot of these guys is very impressive.
Yeah. So that's, so what happened is when we came in years ago with a cast line of stands, you couldn't just get into the business. You know, it cost you $150,000-$200,000 to get some tooling and get set up and going. Now with the, you know, the water jetting and the machining, everybody's got access to computers. They all know how to, you know, do CAD drawings on there and stuff. And it's like everybody and their brother's getting into it. Yeah. Still doesn't mean what they're making is right. Some of it's not. Some of it's too light. It bends. It's not not correct, but it's opened up a lot more for entrepreneurs to, you know, guys like just like me that love to tinker in that and design a stand, and they hunt, love to hunt. So they make their own, and they some of them are starting their own businesses too. So I think from where we started, if you look back, first climbing stick, look at the climbing sticks in our market now.
Yeah.
Designed the first saddle platform. Look at the saddle platforms that are out there now. First climber that stayed up a tree.
Yeah, I understand that completely.
Now everybody kind of looked at that and took that technology and put it on their stand. So same with the camera arms. We kind of were the first at it, and we developed it. And I don't just put stuff out to make money on it. I put it out, and I constantly, still to this day, we got the best stuff going, and we just went and made it better, you know, because it's, we use it, we love it. And it's, we're basically designing it for ourselves. So.
Yeah. So if you haven't had a chance to go through and look at the amount of products on the Lone Wolf Custom Gear website, like, you'll be surprised from where you got, when you guys debuted for a few products, where you're at now, and all these little innovations that you've incorporated and brought along with you through the years. Like, you got a full featured lineup that I can honestly get just about everything you need to get started hunting.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. He had me at, for the 40s, he had me write a list, of the stuff that we did, from, you know, offset bracket to the, you know, every tree stand's got an offset bracket. The first Versa button we designed, those were designs that came out of, you know, I got up a tree, my hang on, had a hook on one side. You can only go in one direction. The amount of trees that I set up a year, you run into a bunch of situations. You wish you could take that belt because of a limb or whatever and switch directions on it. So we modified, you know, I made a button that you can go right, left. I did all this innovation for just, for myself, basically, for what I was doing in hunting. Offset, I couldn't stand a tree stand that's just a degree off and sitting in it. It's horrible. You know, I had a snaky back, so I just, you know, I developed something, I fixed it. And then if you look back, people didn't even know that too. I designed a safety harness that's not on the market. All these tethers that are out there, I designed the first rope and Prusik knot tether to ever be on a safety harness. That was back in old six or whatever. Everybody's selling. We don't even sell one. You know, I developed it. I started it, and but it had the lowest shock rating tested out of all the harnesses ever that were on the market.
Really?
And I did that because I was forced into putting a harness in with my own products, and I didn't want to take someone else's harness and put it in once that TMA came out. So I developed that on my own for that. I wasn't necessarily into building harnesses and selling them. I mean, like some of the companies were. I was more of a tree stand company, but I did it for my personal use. But that spilled over, and everybody's now using that technology also. So first softback traction belt with cam. I mean, I can go on a list. It's just I went back and looked, and there's things in there I forgot I had designed to build. You know, stuff that I just left for dead. I just, you know, got halfway through it and thought, you know, there's bigger fish to fry or different stuff that was more important, you know, so.
Yeah, I can't imagine going through like a, when I think of like your garage and what it looks like, I'm seeing all these like awesome little inventions. You're like, what is this? Oh, that's nothing. No big deal. And then next week it's like, yeah, we can use that. Like let's, it's got something going there. And like just all these little brainstorm ideas popping off all the time.
Yeah. And when I get them in my head, then I got to go make a quick little prototype to make sure that when I'm thinking of mechanic, it works a little bit, then it gets into a big refining from that. You know, it goes to the guys that'll draw it up. I draw all the stuff up by hand. I always joke with them, you know, can you read the crayon scratch? And I'm not very, very good at that, but I'll do like a little mechanical drawing, then they'll go to CAD. And then what we do is different than most. I'll get a first run cut. I got a mountain of platforms and things of versions, like just the first saddle platform. There's probably 25 machined out cut platforms different that were cut, tested, developed. Same with the platforms, same with the camera arms. I got a mountain of, you know, 10, I bet it's close to 100 grand worth of machine prototypes that, and then I physically test them. And then we just perfect it, and then we just keep doing that because we can do it. The very first cast stand that I developed, literally the first platform I made, it wasn't a casting. It was actually, it was a one piece of quarter inch plate stock that I got from the shop that I worked at. And I literally drilled holes on it, took a jigsaw in there and hacked out holes. And I made the roughest first version of a machine platform. And it didn't make any noise. It could flex and move without developing noise. And then I ended up running into a guy I worked at automobile manufacturing, and we had castings in there. And the guy, actually the guy that sold the casting, seen what I was doing, he said, hey, that's going to cost you a gob, you know, to build that and machine that. You should cast it. And that's where the idea for the casting came. So we went and developed that, patented. And even if you look at the patents, it says in there lightweight one piece aluminum, and it says preferably casting. But that first very one I did was, I wish I could find that platform. That would have been, the cables were literally just two holes in there. They weren't bolted to the side. They were ran around and swedged by hand. I mean, it was just a barbaric.
Oh, pro. Yeah.
Man, it was light. It was nice. It was quiet. And then we just developed from there. So, and then we just kept going and going and going. And you see where we're at now. We're just constantly, I got all kinds of ideas in my head for trim saws. Oh, here's another, here's one I forgot. So we just, I did a rack for electric bike. Now, one of our guys is licensing the name. Yeah. And I did, so we have a rack now. It has arms that deploy on it. So it's a 10-inch rack, turns into a 20 if you want. There's a system on there. Any one of our products, any one of our tree stands, there's like 9 different versions. They all just drop right on and lock onto the rack. You strap them down. They don't loosen up. They don't move around. They don't rattle. We've got areas in there to carry your trim saw on the side. We've got water bottle stuff, all kinds of utility built into the first rack. You've seen the racks that everybody's using now. They're just basic plain racks.
Yeah.
Nothing really straps on them good and tight. So that's Face-Off Bikes. You'll see that too. There'll be a landing page on our website in the next 3 weeks. I think he introduced the first bike at the Mobile Hunter Show last week. So that's another product that's...
So I wondered who was going to be the leading edge for customizing the e-bikes to a new level. Because if you remember, if you've got a side-by-side, Polaris come out with the Ranger years ago, and then they had a system of circles all the way around the bed of it, and they had all these attachments, and nobody's been really doing that other than a few manufacturers that make e-bikes. So, like, this will be fun to see these completely customized and outfitted rigs for hunting. Like, e-bikes are a great accessory now, but to outfit it to where it's just seamless, just like it locks in with your tree stand and stuff, like, that's really cool to make life easier.
There's still a long way to go with the e-bike. So I, 2 or 3 years ago, I had the bug. I was going to try and build an e-bike in the States and make one right. So I bought an e-bike, my first Virgin, hunt with it. The first trip in, it made more noise than my moped. It rattled like the brakes squeaked. I went down a hill. I usually turn all my stuff off and ride the brakes, and it creaked louder than hell, scared all the deer out of there. And then when I got to the bottom, I couldn't make it back up to the top with it. So I had a list. There's a lot. Everybody's making the same. It was that with tree stands. It was with game cameras. Everybody's like in a race to the bottom. They just look at what the last guy did, and they copy it, and nobody makes any improvements. So the list of improvements I had, I'm already starting to see bikes starting to get some of the ideas I had and put on them. Lower center of gravity, less bullshit with the, you don't need all the railers and all that. Make a simple, quiet piece of hunting equipment that works, and you will sell a gob of them. And it's a long way off, and I'm starting now with this company, and I'll be developing. You'll see next year we'll come up with some new stuff nobody's got and just start constantly making it and developing it, you know. So and I enjoyed doing that, but boy, like I said, that list that I came back with was like unbelievable of all the problems. They were just not, you know, I don't know what they were geared for, but they weren't really built for hunting, I'll tell you that. So, flat tires, you know. Every other time out, the guy's getting, I didn't get the flat, but I seen buddies of mine going, they go for 3 days hunting, and a whole day of one of it was fixing their tires on their e-bikes. And so all these things have to be fixed. They need to be mailed a dependable piece of equipment. And that's what the serious guy is going to want, and he'll pay for it because he wants stuff that works for him, you know?
Absolutely. And it comes down to quality and dependability. Yeah. We all work hard for our money, whether you're making $20 an hour or $20,000 a month. Regardless of where you spend your money, it has to have an ROI on it. And that ROI for business purposes is, are you going to make money on it? ROI for a hunter is this investment going to pay for itself and make my hunt more enjoyable and easier? And not that it's going to bring deer underneath the base of the stand. It's this timing. It's the setup. Am I more efficient in the woods with that product? And mobile hunting setups have allowed us to do that in recent years. E-bikes are another technology that's made me a lot more efficient. I can even shed hunting. Like, I use an e-bike for shed hunting, and it's just ungodly how much time you spend walking back and forth in fields. Yep. I can take my e-bike and I just run. And my poor dog's trying to keep up, and it turns into a rat race for her rather than a shed hunt. So,
We'll have a lot of unique ideas in that area. I think it's a big part of the business, though. I see a lot of guys, just about everybody's, you know, getting them and wanting them at least, or they can afford them. But it's another piece of equipment that's going to make your life easier and make you more successful at what you're doing, you know. So, all of our stuff is like that. It's geared to the best. Here's one nice thing about ours too, is that we got a lifetime transferable warranty. People try and even copy our warranty, and they'll call it metal warranty or some goofy warranty, lifetime. You know, great. You sell that stand to somebody, he sells it to somebody else, he has a problem with it, he comes back to us. I don't care who has it, who owned it, who bought it. If it's a grandkid or whatever it is, we warrant it. We can build our stuff to last a lifetime. I got cast stands growing in the trees that are, you know, they're still like the day they were put in there. We just build it to last because, you know, we got to hunt out of it ourselves. So it was funny that the organization for tree stands years ago wanted to put a 5-year limit, like suggesting that the stands were so cheap they wouldn't even last 5 years, that you should take your stand and throw it in the garbage and get a.
Hey, let me interrupt this podcast episode real quick and talk about huntinggeardeals.com. If you're interested in saving money on hunting gear, there's no better place on the web. Basically, what huntinggeardeals.com does is scour the web for discounted products on hunting gear and shares them in one convenient location. So type in huntinggeardeals.com in your web browser and sign up for the daily deal email so you never miss a deal. Now, back to the show. Hey guys, we're back. We had a little bit of technical difficulty, so we're going to jump right back in there with Andre. Andre, it's no secret that Lone Wolf Custom Gear is expensive, and it's due to the materials being utilized, the technology, and the innovative products that you guys have. But if I'm not mistaken, you've got some breaking news for us that our listeners are going to want to hear.
So what we're doing is we're developing a cast line of stands again. We're going to bring back the Alpha, the Assault, a commodity line of, I call it a commodity line of sticks, but it'll be a more affordable set of sticks. So what's happened in the near past is that a lot of those cheaper stands or lower end stands are all coming from China and overseas and things of nature. And it kind of, we'd like to have the answer to that back here at home. So I went and looked and searched for a company that would want to work with me. And actually manufacture a cast line of affordable stands here in the States. So, we're partnering with a company who won't mention who it is yet. But we'll have that line coming out in the near future. So this would be a perfect stand. So, you know, I might buy a piece of property. I might want 10 stand setups to put in the lead permanent. This would be that line that you'd buy to put up there. You're not going to go take probably 10, 0.5s or 7s and spend that kind of money on permanent setups.
Right.
Some guys do. And then the sticks too would be more of a commodity type priced stick, you know, a little simpler, but still all the quality that we've become known for, you know. So that's coming in the near future. Probably feather right in toward the season. And then we'll develop that right on through the fall and into hit it real hard next spring, you know. So
okay, and then as far as designs and stuff, are we going to see something very similar to what we've seen in the past as far as sizes, or are we going to see different sizes based off of the mobile setups on the Lone Wolf Custom Gear size?
So we're going to put some of our patents into the casting. We'll use of that, but this is going to be your we're bringing back a sand cast. It's not going to be a real pretty type casting. It's going to be like our original line of stands. I think the Alpha hang on that I had is probably the best all around stand for a permanent. You put it size wise, room, the way it bites, cables way back on it is a perfect stand to sit, leaving for years in a tree. So we're going to bring that one back, but we will put like a shelf feature in there and some other features that we have now, you know, attachable bow holders and things so you can build off of it. But the big point of that one is we want to get that in, and we want to get that in at a price that, you know, more your average guy can afford, you know. So won't be the lightweight stuff that we have now, but it'll be, you know, rock solid like our normal stuff, and it'll fit into a niche that's needed right now, so.
And you're exactly right. I mean, I've got an Alpha hanging up behind my house right now that I've had for years, and I've taken better care of it because it's one of my better stands, mm-hmm. but it's still sitting in a tree. It's been sitting there for a year or two in this particular spot, and they're just so dependable.
Yep.
And it's not a break the bank stand. It's something that you buy once, you don't have to cry about it, and you can buy a couple more of them for the same price. So works out pretty good.
And those two, those last a lifetime. Those stands are they were heat treated and built quality wise. So that's a good addition. Like I said, I don't know where that line will go, but it'll be coming back. A guy doesn't have to make a choice to go to a foreign stand now. You got similar type stand that you can get in the States, you know, again. So I've had a reawakening on that whole thing now too. We are trying our hardest. People don't realize that some of the problems that we've had in filling our orders and getting production in is because we were standing by trying to bring all this stuff back into the States 100%. And the States just aren't built for it. You know, you go to China and get, you know, a backpack for a third the cost of what you got here and get thousands of them just ordered and instantly made. here are the companies that we're backing are small. They're starting small. They're getting bigger. They're developing a bigger capacity. I think our machine shop now in Dresco Machine, phenomenal guys there out in Michigan. Some of the best guys that I've always worked with, good partners, even back when I had the cast line, ZMC Machine, all just top-notch guys that partner with us and helped us. They're expanding their line in the robotics, new buildings, bigger capacity for us. So we're trying to build more of an inventory. But you can imagine with these high-end stands, that's tough to do. It's big dollars to have that inventory level to be built up where you can handle it. But we're doing that. We're doing it for our customers. We invested in equipment to deburr better. All the money that we've been making the last 5 years, we just keep rolling right back in. We're just putting up a new building. Just constantly upgrading everything,
So you talked about deburring, and it brought me to an idea or a thought that happened a couple years ago. I was at the ATA show, and this brand had a newly designed tree stand that was very similar to other brands on the market. Wasn't Lone Wolf Custom Gear. I picked up this stand, and they were making, it's got a pretty paint job on it or powder coat. First thing it does is cut me. I'm like, what the heck? Well, I turn around, the guy's like, that's just like a test model. And I'm like, it failed the test. cut my hand as soon as I touched it. And I don't know how much success they've had with it, but it was a rough one. I'll say that.
So I will say, when we first started out, we had some issues, and that's why we had with some sharp things too. But our sharpness on them was due to the machines, and we didn't have the proper manufacturer, and then we've learned a lot as we went, and we constantly made better and improved. Some of the stands that you're seeing now, how you make them cheaper and undercut guys like us is you cut corners. We're machining all our stuff, deburring it, chamfering it. These companies, and you wonder why they have these huge big holes on them, because the less holes that you cut and less cutting you have, the cheaper you can make it.
Yep.
You don't deburr it, you just water jet it. And we stopped even making water jetted stands. We were scrapping more. Some of these companies will sell them. We wouldn't. We would scrap them and throw them away. So you're losing a lot on that. So all of that stuff that you learn over time, it took us probably 4 solid years to get all the bugs and stuff worked out. And now we get stuff in and everything fits to a T. We scrap absolutely. I don't even think we scrap anything anymore. It's all 100%. These guys are companies that do work for the military. So they're all inspected and they just are top notch outfits. So.
I mean, when you get into the high-end product lineup that you have, the tolerances have to be tight, because if they're not, noise.
Yeah.
Just like if you have a loose bolt on your bow and you shoot that and release that arrow, you hear and feel that vibration.
Yeah.
Same thing with the tree stand. If you have some kind of, whether it's a fastener or whatever, and it's not the perfect fit, you're going to have noise, you're going to have flex that's unnecessary. So keeping those tolerances tight are important.
In newly imported stand, I literally looked at one, and with my eyes, I can see that the holes were so far off, drilled from side to side on the cables. You could see it with a naked eye. Just, too high, close to one wall, not centered on the eyes. You can see their fixtures were all built wrong, and they just keep pounding this shit out and dumping it on the market, and it's just status quo. That's what you get, So we're just not that company. We're gonna always keep the high road with our stuff and make it the very best. It's my life. It's my passion. So I take it all very, very seriously. So
yeah. So you've had, in order to grow through the years that you where. You're, to get to where you're at right now, and you're still growing, and with this cast line coming out, it's major investment and expansion to get you to that point. Cause I'm sure this started probably in your garage all over again, just tinkering around, and then look at where you're at now. So how much of an expansion have you had to make within the business in recent years?
So what people don't realize is we are a smaller American made family owned company. We employ 8 employees here now, but our machine shop employees, probably 30. We're like one of their biggest vendors now. Our anodizers, if you branch out into the amount of people that have jobs through this company, it's huge. And that's all keeping it in America. These are guys that have families. They need good wages to raise them kids here in the States. You know, it costs everything here now.
Oh, absolutely.
And to take that and just go overseas with it, you know, you can line, I could do that and line my pockets big time with the brand I got and make it for a fourth of what I get over there and demand the same price. Just ain't gonna do it. But it's the growth we've had. Now we're putting up another building. Me and my wife, the first time we sold out, it was getting so big, it was starting to turn into a corporation, you know, and we kind of said, you know, we're not, here's where we're out. And it's starting to get to that point again where, you know, we need more help, more marketing guys. It's just, you don't want to keep, you know, a businessman. It just keeps growing and growing. And you don't, at some point in time, you want to keep that infrastructure there and have some sales growth so you can start making some decent money. One other competitor made us some smart statement about that their stuff was designed by aerospace engineers and da 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 da, da, not in a garage. I almost came close to taking a list of the American-made companies that started out in a garage and putting it on the internet. And you don't even have to know the list. You can go to all major, the biggest companies out there that are all basically started where I started mine, in a garage. So to make a comment on like that it was more of a dig, you know, all of those big Remington, all them big companies and even some of these big tech companies, they all started out in small garages. That's where innovation starts. You know?
Exactly. Innovation starts in that garage with somebody that's got the brain that wired that you do, finding little nuances to improve. Mm-hmm. And then the aerospace engineers, what do? They take your ideas and they just copy it to where they can get by your patent.
And the funny part about it is they don't even get it right. And they still have problems with the stuff. That's the funny part about it. So not that it's all that way, but it's just funny that everything you do, even if they go and they can knock it off, they don't even get it right knocking off. They got the sample to look at. You think they get it, you know, get everything right and all the dimensions and stuff correct, and they still don't get it right. So it's a knack. You know, you're doing it so long that you're working with these metals and the friction and the loads that are on a tree, and the guy uses it's different than what you'd anticipate. So you got to anticipate too for what Bubba's going to do out in the stand. So
because you got to so I came from environmental health and safety side of things, so fall protection and all this stuff was second nature, and you don't engineer a product for its intended use only. You have to have a safety factor built into it. It's like, oh, okay, how much pressure is he going to put on the side of this tree stand when he's climbing into it versus just sitting in it?
Yeah.
And all that extra torque and like, oh, is he going to run over it with his truck?
And we used to put a truck up on ours for testing because we didn't have any sophisticated stuff. But so the governing third parties that are testing now are testing for way too low rates. We are not TMA certified anymore. We don't need to be. We're well advanced to those limits. So they'll throw that as a stab too. They don't realize that. So we have a rating that's lower than our competitors. Our stands will blow the competitors away for an actual load tested rating. I also take in factor the size of the platform and the size of a person. You know, a 350-pound guy is not a safe situation on this tiny little stand here. So I'll take that in consideration along with that. We've always had a 3 to 5 times safety factor. Some of our stuff even had higher than that years ago when the industry standard was a 2 times safety factor. And a 2 times is not a good enough safety factor in any industry. Some of the stuff now is built where it'll bend and you won't have a catastrophic thing. So that's a good part of it. But you still should build for something lasting. And when a human life involved there, I would say at a minimum of 3 times safety factor and then build up from there, you know. So I think we have stands right now that we can go tested our little fixed stand, you probably get a 750-pound rated from the company that are out there rating tree stands. I could put 750 pounds on there because it'll handle, you know, twice that. But we don't. We have a 300-pound rating on it. So, again, another missing conceptions that are out there with the rating of these things. I've been around enough. Somebody said a while back, and I think I'd have to agree with them, I probably have more time spent in a tree stand than any other guy on earth.
Yeah, I would imagine.
If you think about what I did when I started from a hobby to hunting 4 months out of the season, hunting every day, evening and morning, then going to show circuits for the entire summer and climbing trees for 3-4 days in there. I have trees, poles in my basement. Every day that I walk around and I live, I'm taking a stick or a stand and I'm jumping on a pole and testing it. I go for walks in the woods to scout. I take my new stick and I look at every different piece of timber, every size tree, and I slap it on there where I'm out there climbing it. It's what I've been doing for years. So that kind of experience in tree time, you just don't get. There are stand companies out there right now that are building tree stands that nobody hunts in the company that they work for. How do they even know what the hell to design or how to design it if you never used it and don't have any experience with it? It's beyond me. So that's the one thing you can be assured of, that the stuff that we got there has had some good, not that we couldn't fall in a ditch or make a mistake or something in manufacturing, that all happens. But there's stuff out there that's just plain simply not designed right and probably shouldn't be there. So
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting to be in my standpoint to where, like, I feel like if I'm going to buy a product, it's got to enhance my hunting experience. And one of those products that I've always had my eye on is a mobile hunting setup from Lone Wolf Custom Gear, because each and every season I go into it, I'm like, I can get by with what I've got this year. And then I go to that Midwestern state and I travel and I spend my 1 week of vacation time frame and all this time and money. And then I get to the tree and I'm like, man, this sucks. Like, why have I not ordered a better tree stand setup, better climbing sticks than what I'm running right now? And I think a lot of people, when you get into the season, you realize, like, man, if I had something a little better, I'd be more efficient. I wouldn't be so hot and sweaty and miserable if I had a quick, efficient, lightweight method to get in and out of the tree.
Think twice about, you know, stepping up your game and moving around more and doing things like that if you had the ability to do it easily. So yeah. I see that. I'll be watching the page, the guys that buy, they're all new their setups, and that's horrible too. I hope they hunt a couple different states, but they'll get their new setup and they go out and, like, in their first two or three sits, they shoot a deer and they fill their tag. And it's like, holy shit, all this investment for that, you know. You want to go out and still enjoy that for the whole season, you know. So I've always been one that I don't want to fill up fast. I want to hunt all the way to the end and multiple times. That's where I spend my best days, is in the woods, in the trees, hunting white tail, you know.
So you are living in Iowa, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So where there's a booner behind every tree, I get it. Now, if you're done in Iowa, what's the next state that you're going to go to and try to fill a tag?
So this year now, I have property in Wisconsin. I haven't been there in 20 years. I'm probably going to hunt that opener maybe this year for a little bit. Now that I'm hiring a few more people and doing a little less than that day-to-day part of the shop and that, I'll go to Illinois. I'll probably hit Ohio this year. But the problem with me is I'll find a deer that's on this property that I want, and then I don't go anywhere. Even if I bought the tags, I'm stuck until I go after that deer. So, you know, I got all this equipment. I got some time on my hand now. I have the luxury to do it, but I'm still geared to my old mentality that I went to Illinois. My idea, Illinois last year, was to go down there, kill a decent buck on video for the show, Whitetail Addictions, and get back here right away and hunt the buck that was on my property that I really wanted to get. First set in the tree, I see a 220-inch class deer. Now what I do? Now I got to go back to Illinois, and I can't settle for anything else. Where I wanted to get back, you know, there was one over here, not as big, but one that I wanted. And it's like I'm torn between two spots. So I'm always going to be like that probably, but I'm going to have more time to do it now. And I do enjoy hunting new terrain though. I like to go scout. That's probably the most thing I enjoy about hunting. Not actually to kill, is to scout, read sign, and manipulate whitetail.
There's no better feeling than when you put a plan together and you say, tomorrow I'm going in to kill this buck. You call your buddy up on the phone. It's like, hey, stars are lining up. All the information says that today it's going to happen. And then you text him and you're like, big buck down. And you're like, how'd you know? It's like, oh, I don't know. I've actually done homework for the last 3 months, scouted, planned, run cameras, watched weather patterns.
A surgically removed deer from the earth. Everything was precise. It was a plan, and it came through. None of this luck of the draw. You know, I set up a stand and turned around, and there he was, something I'd never seen before, and killed my biggest buck or something. So
one of these deer back here on the rack here, I literally dropped a pin on X and said, this looks like a good spot. I'm going to go in and scout it on the next windy day. Mm-hmm. So I had a good wind in my face, and I said, I'm going to scout my way into this creek bottom. I got to the pen and I looked at my phone. I went, oh, I'm here. No center. And I said, this buck starts walking up. I shoot the buck at 20 yards and I'm like, man, this could not have happened any better. And it was the coolest hunt ever, but it was like, oh, my Ohio tag's done. Like, yeah. It's over with.
That really, I bleed for the guys there, man. They only got that one tag in Ohio. That's got to be just brutal.
It is. And then you're like, okay, I'm gonna keep passing. I'm going to keep passing. And then you're like, the end of the season, you're like, dang it. I wish I wouldn't have passed on those 4 bucks that I've been passing on all season.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, that's nice. But again, it's what we do. It's what I've been doing all my life. Probably what I'll be doing until I die. So, I don't know where I'm going to go from here, but someone will come up with something, or a trend will start maybe on, on our page that I'll see starting to develop, and then I'll go maybe put some product out there or develop something new. So, and here's the other thing, if you talk about equipment. So because I am innovative in that way, I'm constantly, I have a bunch of patents on cameras. I got patents on ground blinds, just patented a new broadhead, the first aluminum machine broadhead. All these different things I branch off because I just, not that I'm getting bored here, but I'm running out of places to go with it. And I see little problems in other areas and I want to fix them. So that's what I do. I develop all kinds of different things. I got patents on bowls. I made a bowl years ago.
Yep.
But the thing is, in this industry, I'm not noted for bowls. I'm not noted for broadheads. I'm not noted for cameras. So our niche is when someone says lone wolf, you think tree stands, 100%. So,
absolutely.
So some of this technology will be licensed to other companies that they can utilize and run with it, So,
yeah, and I would imagine that the people that are familiar with your last name and your brand, if they see those products from another company, they'll be like, oh, man, Andre made that? Like, I want to buy that, too.
They'll take
because
a look.
We trust in the product that you've produced for the last 40 years. Yeah. Why wouldn't we trust for it in a broadhead?
Look what I had to do. It tore me up that I had to remove our license from a company that was not maintaining the quality I demanded. I didn't want to do it at all. Tried to talk them into doing what they needed to do, but I can't let. So that's all you have with a trademark is the quality of your product. There's no product anymore. It's the name brand that's put on anything. It has to have. That's why I'm really reluctant to just take my name and slap it on a broadhead. Or I had scent companies come to me. Everybody knows I'm not a big scent guy, so wanting to just give me a bunch of money to put my name on scents. Well, everybody knows I'm not into that, or whatever it is, cameras or whatever the hell the deal is. So it's got to be unique and different. So whenever I do like a licensing deal, I always come up with a unique patented idea that nobody else has that you could take along with the name brand and then develop a new product that way. So,
so how many patents do you think you've had through the years?
I don't even, there's a ton pending now, but, like I said, I went back through I got a box with some of that halfway made, some that didn't go, that we got 3/4. When I sold that company, I had a bunch of patents pending, and I basically, just left that box and disappeared for a while. And some of them even lapsed where, you know, they should have been maintained and gone. Mm-hmm. And I let them lapse, and guys, and some other companies even picked up some of those and got access to those ideas. So I couldn't tell you a number, but I think we have right now, I'll be willing to bet that we have more patents and patents pending than all the tree stand manufacturers that are in the United States right now. If you took what they got, because most of them got our development that's over the years on there. And I don't have a problem with somebody utilizing what that's a feather in my cap. I actually love to see that. They're using the Versa button. They're using the off bracket. They're developing sticks, you know, that I literally invented years ago. That's not a problem for me. It's when they take an innovative idea that there's a patent pending, and then they copy that and go with it. And I've seen people say on there, we'll talk about it a little bit, well, that's how things get, you know, other companies get to build it. That's not how it works. A patent is there for somebody to build the best mousetrap, and everybody else now is going to have to step up their game and innovate to improve on that. So that warrants me a certain amount of years. Now, if somebody comes up with a better mousetrap than me, I go back to the drawing board and I build something and I design something even better or even an improvement. And that's how this expands and you get better quality. If everybody took, that's what I said about like the e-bikes and the game cameras. Everybody looks at what the last guy did and copies it. So you just copied a piece of shit. Then another guy copies a piece of shit. Then another guy. And pretty soon, there's generations of this shit that's out there, and everybody's accustomed to just, this is low-end garbage, you know?
Yep.
Step up the game, make a better mousetrap, and then keep developing, and then the next guy's got to develop and get better, and there's a bunch of creative guys out there, but you got to make them think. It's very easy to, I could do that for cheaper than he can do it, and I can undercut them and just make a product, you know? So don't like to do that. And I see, you know, I give credit where it's due too. Some guys got some pretty good innovative designs and some ideas, and some don't, you know. So
yeah, I mean, I can't imagine being in that world of this industry, because there's so much copying. I mean, you've been to ATA show for years and years. Like, you go around that ATA show and it's just, you see the same product in booth A versus booth B, and it's just a different color. It's like, okay, who did it first? Yeah. Probably this little guy over here in the innovation zone or wherever, and you guys have more money to put behind it. And you see that time and time again.
It's an important thing to have that little bit of protection to warrant you a few years to, you know, develop it and make some money on it and build your company, you know. So if you can't get it done by the time that patent's up, it's left for everybody to benefit on now. So like all my other designs that are out there, the castings, you know, the offset brackets, whatever it is, that's open technology for anybody to use now, which is good. Use it. I love seeing all that stuff out there. So,
So I mean, at the end of the day, you and I, we're not going to live forever.
All right.
But the products that you've made within this industry, they're going to live on.
That's what that's one thing I hold sacred. I think about that all. Somebody had a stand out there. They bought on, some site that was cheaper than one. And at the time that was, I think I put a post on there. Chance, that's this stand, and chances are I actually built that tree stand that you're hunting out, you know, that you just bought and you're going to hunt out. So, you know, I used to build all the stands years ago too. Yeah. Myself and just starting out, we didn't have, other employees. So, I just think about all the guys in those stands hunting, enjoying that, killing their first big bucks or whatever it is, you know. It's like, I feel like I'm a part of that all in some form or way, and also it's just kind of a good feeling to have that.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, I hope my neighbors would buy a bunch of shit that makes noise that they can't get any deer out of, but everybody else could go with that top quality stuff.
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. Like, you see the order come through the website and be like, man, that address is awfully close to mine. Let's cancel that one. We're out of stock this year.
What's real funny is that, I'll tell you a quick one about equipment. So I used to hunt big public land up in upper Wisconsin, and you, for an entire 4-month season, you would not run into another guy ever. And then as the years went on, more and more hunters were out there. And I think me and my brother were up there one day in the middle of freaking nowhere. And I wasn't selling a lot of stands at that time, but I was selling, you know, starting to have a business. Two dudes come through with our tree stands on their back. That, and, you know, and the amount we sold and where we were, and it was like, you know, holy shit, look at my brother. So we got some competition. And then the time we showed up at a public, the parking spot, and the guy told me a story. We were just getting known, and two guys were talking about the stands were still in the woods, whatever, and they were talking about equipment. And they were both said, hey, what are you hunting for a stand? And one guy goes out of a Fox or some stuff, and the other guy's, or no, he goes, I'm hunting out of the best tree stand ever built. Well, what is it? And he didn't know what the name was because our logo looked like a fox back then, and he didn't know. It's no, you ain't. I got the best tree stand. And they were arguing. I heard the story from a guy, one of the two guys that was at a show that came and told me about it. They were both arguing back and forth about who had the best stand, and they both had our tree stands. When they ended up, one guy didn't remember the name. The other guy was calling it wolf stands, you know. but they were both lone wolf tree stands they had. So that's a good feather in your cap.
Oh, absolutely.
The other one is when you're on a good buck and you come into the parking lot and some other son of a bitch shows up and he pulls a lone wolf stand out. You know, this guy's got game, and it's, it ain't like, you know, now you're worried that, oh shit, there's a serious guy I'm up against, you know? So it's funny this, you know, he pulls out one of these cheaper Chinese stands. Like, well, this guy ain't got a prayer in the world. You know, he's not like a hardcore serious guy, but, it was funny a long time ago. So,
yeah, I mean, to see the industry change and how much it has in the last 40 years, you've been at the pinnacle of innovation. And as a hunter, like everybody listen to this, we've all benefited from the hard work that you've put into your, not only your business, mm-hmm. but also just designing products and tinkering and sharing that knowledge with us so we can grow and expand our hunting opportunities. So on behalf of the hunting community, Andre, I want to say thank you, not only for being on the podcast today, but just for being a part of this industry and driving innovation continuously for 40 years.
I really appreciate that, man. And I hope you shoot your biggest buck next year out of one of our stands. Send me some pics.
Hey, sounds great. That's the plan. I'll be definitely down to do that and be the first one to be like, hey, Andrew, Andre, look what I got.
Love seeing them.
All right, buddy. I appreciate it. Thank you for being on the podcast today. And where can everybody learn more information about the products you've talked to us about today?
Lone Wolf Custom Gear. Go to the website. Be sure to follow us, Whitetail Addictions. These are all guys just like me and you that are all just average Joes that are hunting, and the show's about them. They're all passionate bow hunters, using a lot of our equipment for years. So you'll be able to see a lot of the guys there too. A lot of our, like to call them partners, not pro staff guys, but Lone Wolf Custom Gear will have all the new stuff. And then if you do go on there and apply to the guys that are on our mailing list, email list, they get first dabs at that. You'll learn about these new products that are released in the next couple months first before like the general public, and then we put it out to the general public. So keep an eye on that.
That works. So if anybody else needs to learn information, make sure you sign up for the email newsletter located at Lone Wolf Custom Gear. Thanks, Andre.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Reggie, I just sold my car online.
Let's go, Grandpa. Wait, you did?
Yep, on Carvana. Just put in the license plate, answered a few questions, got an offer in minutes. Easier than setting up that new digital picture frame.
You don't say.
Yeah, they're even picking it up tomorrow. Talk about fast.
Wow, way to go. So, about that picture frame.
Forget about it. Until Carvana makes one, I'm not interested.
Car selling made easy. On Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.